Hello and welcome to the Welsh Rugby Podcast. I'm your host, Ben James. I'm joined, as ever, by Stefan Thomas. And we've got a full weekend of action to discuss. All four regions were in action last weekend, as well as the start of the Women's Six Nations. Steph, how are you doing, first of all? All good?
Yeah, not bad. Still recovering from the Six Nations. Still trying to... You know, a bit of soul searching going on, trying to work out why Wales are so bad at the moment. But I'm slowly recovering.
It wasn't a vintage tournament. We were hoping that, you know, following on from their third place finish last year, the women could provide us with some crumbs of positivity, as we'll get on to later. That wasn't quite the case based on the opening weekend. And funny enough, I think the positivity this weekend has come from an unlikely source. The Scarlets getting their first victory since the start of December, their first victory in Llanelli since November. And it came in dramatic fashion, didn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, the most important thing is they won. They've shown a bit of character because they look dead and buried, to be honest. But let's make no bones about it. It was still quite... poor performance on the whole, if we're being honest. Benetton weren't at their best. It was a low-quality game, but, you know, they dug in deep and they got the win, and they probably deserved to win that game, but they've still got huge problems they need to fix. Their attack was really one-dimensional. Johnny Williams was quite prominent, but, you know, he was getting over the gain line, but they didn't really have that much idea after first, second, third phase. They sort of run out of ideas. They just looked like a team that was low on confidence. So I suppose the hope is that now that they got one win, that they can at least kick on a little bit. But I won't be holding my breath.
No, that was the most obvious thing, I think, watching on, particularly in the early exchanges, was the lack of confidence. They were sort of forcing offloads. They were trying to go out the back when it wasn't really on. Guys like Sam Costello, Johan Lloyd, who obviously have... you know, basically endured their first ever Six Nations campaign, you know, vying for the number 10 jersey, which is always a tricky thing to sort of compete for in Welsh rugby. And you could sort of, you could see the pressure sort of sitting on their shoulders, the, you know, frustration was getting to them at times. And I suppose it's to the Scarlets' credit that they sort of stuck in it, even though things were just, you know, it was quite sloppy and sort of, things were being forced unnecessarily. And, you know, part of that is on Benetton probably not putting them away like they could have. But, yeah, on the whole, I think the Scarlets did deserve it.
Yeah.
But they made such hard work of it in that second half, didn't they? But, you know, Johan Lloyd at 15, I thought, showed glimpses of what he can do. As you say, Johnny Williams carried well. Kieran Hardy, I thought, made a big difference. Coming on at 9. I felt like when he came on, the Scarlets looked their most promising in attack. And of course, you know, he made the half break that led to Steph Evans getting over the line, even though he was held up, and that set the platform for the winning try from the line out. But yeah, just a real sort of inability to convert attacking chances in that second half. It did feel like you were watching a familiar script. The fact that they managed to get over the line is huge because, let's be honest, it was a 3 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday and the crowd wasn't great. And I know we look, you know, crowds get looked at in Welsh rugby more than, you know, than anyone likes. But I think the reality is that a lot of Scarlets fans are probably fed up with what they've seen in recent months, even seasons. So you couldn't afford for things to get any worse. So they just simply had to win, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, but you said about Johan Lloyd. He was, you know, he brings a different dimension to their attack. We all know that, but you can't ignore the simple missed tackle on the Benetton wing, which led to a try. You know, that should have been made. And yeah, when you talk about international rugby, it's little things like that, mistakes like that he's got to get out of his game if he wants to really cement himself as an international because the jury's still out. I thought Alex Craig was outstanding. You know, he had a lot of injuries when he was at Gloucester, so it was a bit of a punt for the Scarlets to take him on, but I thought he had a really good game. But one thing that baffles me a little bit, the strongest scrummagers the Scarlets have got are on the bench.
Yeah.
Wyn Jones is a better scrummager than Cameron Mathias, significantly so. There's no getting away from that. Sam Wainwright, I think, has shown a bit more than Harry O'Connor. I know it's different later on in games, but I think he's done really well. And, you know, the line-out sort of malfunctioned throughout the game, and then when they brought Swart on, it changed. You know, it was quite amusing that our columnist, Gwyn Jones, giving man of the match or player of the match. He was only on the field for 6 minutes. He was interviewed after the game. He looked embarrassed, and that was quite comical. But yeah, you know, there's some improvements. Their forwards were a lot better. Obviously, when Lousy and Fafita play, they're a different team. But, you know, their game plan was like, give it to Johnny Williams. And he was doing a good job getting over the game line, but he was sort of like forcing the offload too much. But they sort of run out of ideas after that. And that's a bit concerning. But I suppose, you know, it's a step forward because they've actually won the game. But they're going to have a much tougher test on the weekend against Glasgow, I think.
That's the thing. It doesn't get any easier, does it? But, yeah, you mentioned Craig, and he was to the fore in their other sort of wins. Certainly the win over Cardiff at the Arms Park. So, you know, it's been a good addition. I thought someone else who's played really well for them, probably for a few games now, is Tommy Lewis on the wing.
Yeah.
Looks really dangerous. It just, I don't know, just looks like someone who can cause problems for opposing defences when he gets, and he's probably half the time he's working off scraps, but just looks, just someone who probably gets supporters a bit excited, because when he gets the ball, you think he's got a chance of doing something. And I think when you're low on confidence, that's sometimes what you need. It's just one of those players who can do that. Yo, and Lloyd, obviously, you know, we've mentioned the sort of pros and cons of him as a player, but he's someone else who does that. You know, his footwork, you know, get on the ball and you think, well, they could probably do something here. And that's what you need, really. And, you know, you look at where the other regions are maybe succeeding, particularly Cardiff, as we've mentioned so many times, is that they do sort of have that... The way they're playing rugby is maybe not conducive to getting victories at the minute. But it's good for fans to watch. Which, you know, ironically is what the Scarlets has always been about, really, is playing a certain style of rugby. So yeah, even that's why it's tough, because even though they got the win, the fact it was sort of so laboured is a concern. You just hope that that's the little break they need. You know, you look back to last year, and I mean, their first half of the season was quite similar, wasn't it? Poor results, and then they sort of turned a corner, and they really turned a corner. Now we're not expecting to do that, because that was what, but they win something like 10 out of the they had the Challenge Cup as well to help, but and you know, it's a bit different now, because some of their players who weren't sort of in the Wales setup, and now, you know, guys like Joe Roberts could come in and play 10 games in a row for the Scarlets last year, and that wasn't an issue. Obviously, now he's been in the Six Nations squad, and, you know, coming back with knocks and stuff like that. So, it's, you know, you're not expecting that to happen, but you just hope this is enough of a result for them to sort of turn a slight corner, because they need something, don't they? Because nothing major is going to change in the short term there. They may look at the hierarchy. You know, once the season's done, they may decide to get a director of rugby. Dwayne Peel's position, despite what, you know, I mean, that's all sort of died down. His position's safe, you know. I remember, you know, looking back towards Christmas time when him and Di Flanagan felt like they were under pressure for their jobs when the two of them met. Rodney Parade, that's all sort of died down. You know, Dwayne Peel's not going anywhere. they might change, you know, they might get a director of rugby to work above him. We don't know that yet, but nothing's really changing. So like everyone else in Welsh rugby, they've got to work with what they've got. And you just hope that that victory was just enough to sort of light a few sparks of confidence, you know, because it's been a long time since that drum's been banged in the Parker Scarlett's dressing room, isn't it? And, you know, probably to get the dust off it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because, like, ultimately, there's nothing but pride to play for them this season. But,
no, exactly.
You know, a lot of their supporters, obviously, they've suffered quite a lot this season. You know, they've lost games they probably should have won, like the Dragons game. At Rodney Parade, they probably should have beaten the Ospreys at home. Johan Lloyd didn't bring his kicking boots. And it's just been like a vicious circle, and it's just been all negative. So I think, you know, at the very least, they need, you know, they're probably going to lose to Glasgow on the weekend because they're a better team. But at the very least, you'd hope that their performances are a bit better and they play with a bit more confidence. But it's slim pickings, isn't it, when you're trying to think of anything positive to say about their season. And that's just the reality of it, unfortunately.
No, exactly. I guess moving on, you know, staying in West Wales, of course the Ospreys do remain in the hunt for the top eight, although their chances probably took a bit of a blow with defeat to Munster. Quite agonising, really, wasn't it? Because, you know, they sort of fell behind early on. You know, that third Munster try from the intercept was almost freakish in terms of how the ball sort of stayed in play, and then Owen Williams has sort of tried to hack it clear and it sort of bounced right into the hands. But they got themselves back in it to an extent, and then you thought that Alex Cuthbert's going to secure them two bonus points and his hamstring goes. And that's, you know, that's 2 points gone, which could prove crucial at the end of the season for Alex Cuthbert. Obviously, was it his third game back from injury? He's only a few games in, I think. He came back in sort of during the Six Nations fallow weeks. So it's gutting for him, and it's gutting for Toby Booth that on such a sort of in such a freakish way that they've lost out on 2 points there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they just started poorly, didn't they? That was the difference. They gifted Munster what was it, 19 points early on, and, you know, credit to Munster for taking them, but I think it was more on the Ospreys gifting them, like the intercept and, you know, the first Munster try. I mean, who scores off first phase anymore? You know, it wasn't great. But to be fair, as they've shown all season, they showed a lot of character. They got a strong backbone. You know, they had them on toast in the scrum up until Nicky Smith went off. Anyway, who's going to be a big loss when he goes to Leicester? And I think he's going to do a great job there. You know, they fought their way back into the game, and they were better than Munster in some aspects, but they just left themselves with too much to do. And I think obviously Cuthbert had a good game on the whole. You know, he did well to score the try, but then late on, you know, he can't get more unlucky than that. And even though they lost the game, if they'd had two losing bonus points, I mean, that could technically be the difference between making the playoffs and not. So somebody upstairs obviously just doesn't want them to get there, because that was just cruel bad luck. And I just think, you know, this weekend's game against the Lions is must win, isn't it? They can't lose that one. And expect to make the playoffs. So they put pressure on themselves, haven't they? That bad start, just a few minutes of sloppiness has cost them. So they're up against it now, I think.
Because they've had a couple of games like that recently. I can't remember who they played in one of the fallow weekends. But again, they started slowly in that one, and they made a good comeback, and they kept in it, and they showed that sort of spirit that they've got. And to be fair, when you, a team that is coached like the Ospreys will always give themselves a chance, because set piece, they are just so efficient, aren't they? You know, I think they probably don't get the credit they deserve sometimes in terms of their attacking progress over the last three seasons. But that's simply because they've got a formidable pack. And then you've got like a 12, like Kieran Williams, who does such a great job of game line dominance. So, you know, they can play that way. So you don't necessarily worry too much about how else they sort of play in terms of their attack. So they always keep themselves in the fight like that. But yeah, slightly worrying trend if that becomes a habit of, you know, not really starting games as strongly as they have done. You know, Mark Jones has done a very good job with defence this year. I think the numbers support that year on year under Booth, tries conceded has gone down, and that's certainly the case this year. But again, you can't be giving teams like Munster 19-point head starts. And, you know, obviously they've got a playoff to try and get to, but, you know, there's only, is it one weekend? I'd say the Lions this weekend, then they're into a game against Sale, European knockout match. You know, again, you can't really be trying to shake off those bad habits so soon before that. So,
well, they're two knockout games, really, aren't they? Because if they lose to the Lions, to all intents and purposes, you can't really see them making the playoffs. But I think they're good enough to beat Sale. I think Sale, obviously, no mugs. They're a strong pack, and you know they're a horrible team to play against. But I think with a big crowd behind them at the Brewery Field, and as long as they don't start sloppily, I think the Ospreys might be slight favourites for that. But talking of crowds, you know, the crowd wasn't great, was it? Was it just under 4,000? And the other regions obviously got a bit of an excuse because even though Cardiff have had big crowds, but if you look at like the Scarlets, it's a dead rubber, isn't it, really? You know, for them, there's nothing to play for. But I'm just baffled because this is an Ospreys team that's been going quite well. There's a lot to admire about them. They've got some, you know, very good players, some of the best young talent in Wales, great coach. And it was a big game. You know, they had the defending champions coming to town, playoffs more than achievable. You know, it's baffling, isn't it, in some ways, why wasn't at least 7,000 there. You know, it was a shocking crowd. And, you know, Lance Bradley has been very honest, and I think he should be praised for that. You know, he said that, you know, the stadium's too big for them and they want to, you know, move to a different stadium. Obviously, part of that is making stuff like non-match day income and the like to make themselves viable. But, you know, if you can't get more than 4,000 for the defending champions, Munster, when you're well in the playoff hunt, you just, you know, if I was him, I'd be pulling my hair out. I don't really know what more they could do, really. But it's, I think they deserve better. It's a baffling one, that one, for me.
Is it a conversation that happens that much around the world? Because, I mean, I was watching Super Rugby on Saturday morning, and the Crusaders' dreadful start to the season continued in Auckland against the Blues. But, you know, Eden Park was, you could literally, you're rattling around in there if you're a fan. I dreaded, I wouldn't like to say how many they had there, but it looked near empty.
Even the South Africa, it's a good point, because even
the South African teams, they rattle around, don't they?
Yeah.
But then again, they're all sort of from that mindset and that thing of using national stadiums. Obviously, the Auckland Blues Crusaders game was at Eden Park. The Western Force played the Queensland Reds. I don't know where that game was, but again, that's a poor crowd. But then Australia have struggled for crowds for some time, haven't they? And then you happen to put, I think it was the, put some NRL on, and they're having, obviously, rugby league, and Australia has no problem with crowds. So they're battling that problem. I think it was the West Coast Tigers? I forget the name of the team now. Benji Marshall's team, the one he's coaching. They seem to have a good crowd there compared to what you get in Australia for rugby union. But it always seems to be more of a topic of conversation here, honestly, with the Ospreys. It's valid because whatever new stadium they move to depends on it, doesn't it? But it is a strange one. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. The Sale game at the Brewery Field, you know, because they had a decent crowd for the Cardiff game, and that was horrendous conditions. You know, another good crowd there, and if that, if you know, if you get a good result from it, then that only sort of strengthens the argument that you need a sort of more custom built stadium that, that suits the capacity crowds you're going to get. You know, you only have to look at like the Arms Park and Rodney Parade in terms of the impact they can sometimes have. You know, Ospreys don't like going to Rodney Parade for a start. And the Arms Park crowds made a big difference this year in games. Which is probably quite a nice segue because we're not going to see an Arms Park crowd for a while, are we?
That's another thing, isn't it? Like, you know, in terms of like, if you're supporting a team, a lot of it is like habit as well, isn't it? Like in Northern Ireland, Friday night is, every other Friday is Ulster Rugby night. But if you haven't got a game for 7 weeks at home, I mean, it's just people just fall out of the habit. It's not, sometimes even, it's not that much to do with if a team's successful. It's like they got other things to do on a Saturday, you know, not sport related. It's, habits are really important. Human beings are creatures of habit. And I don't think the MRC is doing itself any favours with the schedule.
You do sometimes hear of people being asked what is the ideal kickoff, and problem is just there people differ. You know, like you look at the Scarlets, they play 3 o'clock on Saturday. If you think about it, it's an international weekend in football. So Wales football are played on Thursday and Tuesdays. There's no clashes there in terms of football. Swansea City aren't playing this weekend. So in theory, Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff should be perfect for Scarlets, but then I suppose a lot of people would say, well, that's when their local rugby club's playing. Or there'd be countless other reasons. Obviously the Scarlets form doesn't help. You know, the fact that they haven't won in Llanelli for 4 months, 4 or 5 months. But yeah, it is a tough one to work out quite what the ideal solution is. And you know, if everyone had a sort of Ulster Friday kickoff time, that would help. And to be fair, I think the Arms Park is probably that they always seem suited for a Friday, Saturday night, the Arms Park, because people roll in either from straight from work or they're in Cardiff on a Saturday, and it's there, it's right in the middle of town. But as we say, they're not going to have a home game till what, late April. They've got a run of away games now, and it was a tricky one to start with. But they show plenty of fight, didn't they? Away to Glasgow, and yeah, they probably come away with that one disappointed they didn't get more.
Yeah, it was a good performance. Thought they were the better side, to be honest, and probably should have won. You know, I'm on the fence whether, you know, the Ben Thomas went over the line in the second half. I don't know. I think the ball might have hit the line, so they were a bit unlucky there. You know, I was actually really impressed. I was impressed with Ben Thomas, and it's interesting because Jiffy, our other columnist, said that Wales, obviously, you know, they got an issue at 12. You know, they haven't got enough footballers, but he's a footballing 12, isn't he? Whether he's got the physicality and the size to do it at Test level remains to be seen, but he's playing well. But I was also quite impressed with Will Davis King as well, because obviously tight end is a weak position in Wales. Let's not beat around the bush. He was in the training camp for the World Cup, wasn't he? And he got injured, but he's a big man. So I'd be surprised if Wales didn't have a look at him at some stage. You know, Shane Lewis-Hughes had a good game as well. And you could tell as well, because there's a lot of players out of contracts and their performances have gone up. So there's a lot of players playing for contracts, either at Cardiff or somewhere else, I think, as well. On the whole, it was a really good performance. Their attacking game was really good. I think physically they were a lot better, but it was just like little things. You know, Glasgow obviously scored early in the second half and that gave them momentum right back, and a few refereeing decisions didn't go their way. But I thought they were the best side in the whole and were unlucky not to win the game. And, you know, people blame Ellis Bevan for kicking, you know, not keeping the ball in hand late on. I imagine he either got the time wrong or the call, misunderstood a call, but it was definitely a game that they'll be angry at that they didn't win, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I think it shows that Gethin Jenkins is having an impact now that he's gone full-time from his 2 days a week.
Our defence is a lot better, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think Matt Sherriff spoke afterwards that basically what Gethin had put out in training the week before, they did to a T. and it worked really well. They did a good job of disrupting Glasgow's line out as well, didn't they? Which, you know, not many teams have done this season. And yeah, you mentioned some of the standouts there. Ben Thomas, you know, Sherritt said last week when all the talk was about Grady, Mason Grady playing 12 because of his cameo against Italy. I think Ben Thomas is going to be the 12 for Cardiff until the end of the season. Matt Sherritt likes a footballer there. Grady's going to stay on the wing, which, you know, is interesting moving forward because maybe that's what Wales need, is a footballer there. As Jiffy said, you certainly feel like they need to move in one or two directions with that. Teddy Williams was another one that I don't think you mentioned. I think he made 32 tackles.
Yeah, which he's really developing well.
Remarkable, yeah. But also it's impressive if you consider he had he probably had quite a frustrating Six Nations from his point of view because he looked really good off the bench against Scotland and then didn't feature again. I don't think he was released back to Cardiff for either of the fallow weekends either, so that's a long time without rugby. Particularly when you actually started the campaign playing quite well. So to sort of come back in and hit your strides like that, it's tough on him because if you look at the options ahead of him with Wales, you know, Adam Beard, Dav Jenkins, Will Rowlands, all very established internationals, but some of his performances here, you do feel like he is really knocking at the door now, don't you?
Yeah, it reminds me a bit of like the type of second row the All Blacks would select in terms of his footballing ability, and he's like almost like a basketball player into the way he offloads. Obviously, the challenge for him has been, can he cope with like the physicality in against the bigger packs? But I think he's answering those questions now. He's doing the dirty work as well, and his rugby IQ was quite good as well. I think he's really knocking on the door. I mean, when you look at Wales in moving ahead to the summer, I mean, obviously you'll have Will Rowlands and Jenkins and Beard look pretty much nailed on. But I think Teddy Williams does offer something a bit. His point of difference is different to everyone else. He has a skill set that, you know, perhaps, you know, would suit the style of rugby you're going to get against the Wallabies. So, yeah, I hope he gets, and he deserves an opportunity, doesn't he? I think he's got quite a high ceiling.
There's always that midweek game at the end of the tour against the Queensland Reds.
Talking about the tour, right? I was watching Gloucester on Friday night. Max De Whelan had a really good game. He's been in and out of the team. Austin Healy was raving about him. And another one who played well is Josh Hathaway.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, annoyed Byron Hayward last year when he jumped ship to England. But, you know, if Wales, with Rhys Armitt gone, Fewa Boso, you know, chosen England, you know, there aren't that many options out wide. So could he be a dark horse? Because we can't, you know, we need as many good players as we can get. And he's obviously someone with potential. So would you look at him?
Yeah, I think they potentially will. Because like you say, the wing cupboard isn't that stocked. Obviously, you've got guys like Tom Rogers there, sort of at the minute, knocking on the door. Although he's, you know, injury is sort of hindered him a little bit in terms of the Six Nations. Gatland's mentioned Ollie Hassel-Collins, but I don't think he becomes eligible until 2026.
Yeah, just before the World Cup.
From memory. Yeah, I think he's around the same time that Rhys Carey becomes eligible for everyone else in the Home Nations. Scotland will be calling. So yeah, that's a while to be sort of waiting for Hassel-Collins. So yeah, they'll have to look at other people, and there aren't too many options. Like someone like Keelan Giles has played really well this year, but realistically, is he getting a chance at Test level if he hasn't already? Maybe not, which is a shame because I think it's been his best performance.
Yeah, he's got serious gas as well, hasn't he? Which is, you know, something maybe Rio Dyer is not slow, obviously, but losing Louis Rhys Armitt, obviously, maybe that's been lacking a bit. I think with Keelan Giles, they've had concerns over his aerial ability and his defensive ability, but he's definitely somebody who's knocking on the door. But I just think, like, maybe this, you know, a lot of the listeners won't like this way of thinking, but you don't want to lose another young player to England, do you? So I'd be on the phone to Josh Hathaway and he'd be going to Australia. But if I was Warren Gatland, I'd be offering him a place on the tour. And obviously, he's only played one friendly, but it's worth keeping an eye on Regan Grace as well, if he gets an opportunity, because I think he's also English qualified. So, you know, I just think, you know, the Welsh coaches need to, not saying that they're not, but they need to be proactive in trying to persuade some of these people, some of these promising players to play for Wales, because, you know, you look at Jacob Beetham as well, you know, Scotland wanted him. He's a top prospect, another one who played well in the weekend. So, yeah, I just think with these dual qualified players, we just can't afford to lose many more, really. So I use the tour to tie a few players to Wales.
The final region that we're in action, of course, were the Dragons. I think similar to Cardiff, a brave defeat. I think Dyke Flanagan probably had some complaints maybe with some of the officiating when the game was a bit closer. But then I suppose you look at the team they lost to, the Bulls, and the players who are pulling the strings for them, you know, Willie LaRue, Kurt Lorenzo. It's always a tough ask, isn't it, when you've got Springboks and world champions like that?
Yeah, they were obviously very competitive for about an hour, weren't they? And they were up for the fight. They held their own physically. Saw Rodri Williams was quite spiky against a couple of... I'm not sure how wise that is, mate, against a couple of South African forwards, but it was just that extra power in the end. And the Bulls have got power, but there's so much pace in their team as well, so much dynamism. And they got, as mentioned, two there. LaRue is a world-class player. Kurt Lorenzo is a great player as well. So they're obviously a class outfit. And, you know, they play Leinster this weekend in Dublin, top of the table clash. That's going to be mouth-watering. Obviously, they won a semi-final out there 2 years ago, didn't they? So that would be one to look forward to. But yeah, I thought the Dragons were... I thought the scoreline was harsh on them. I think there was some really poor refereeing calls, as Di Flanagan alluded to. Although Di was really keen to stress it wasn't the ref's fault, it was the team of officials not helping him. And that's an important point that's often missed when people criticise referees. But yeah, at the end of the day, they gave everything. There was a lot of good parts of their performance, but they haven't got the resources really to beat a fully fledged, a fully strength Blue Bulls side who are at their best. And that's where they're at. And that's all you can ask for them, that they give their all and they play to the best of their ability. And unfortunately, they were up against a much better team, and that the scoreline proves that.
No, and again, I think like everyone in Welsh rugby, basically the boat that the Dragons are in is getting to the end of the season and hopefully being in a better place for next year, where it's not going to get any easier, as we've mentioned so many times, with the budgets getting smaller, but just things like having a defence coach in place, which, you know, the wheels are in motion on that, aren't they? And, you know, just one or two key signings, one or two retentions. You know, I know that Di Flanagan again spoke about Tane Basham potentially make a decision whether he stays in Newport, goes to Llanelli or Saracens. Just things like that are what really needs sorting out for them. And everyone really in Welsh rugby as we enter the final straight. Okay, let's touch on the women's Six Nations then. We were hoping for a bit more joy, I think, than the men's Six Nations. Obviously coming off a wooden spoon in that. Whereas Wales 2023, they finished third, which, you know, took them to a new highest world rank and got them into the top tier of the new W15 competition that was held in New Zealand last year. All sort of showing the progress they've made in the last few years as professional contracts have come in and, you know, they've made steady improvements. This time around, their opener was against Scotland. So nearly could have been a draw. You know, Wales did well to sort of come back, and it came down to a missed conversion at the end, which I'm sure Scotland will be feeling delighted about, because I'm pretty sure they lost to Wales in a World Cup a couple of years ago. Ciara Bevan, late penalty, so they'll consider that karma. But I guess it's it's an indication of, for all the growth that we've had in Welsh rugby in terms of the women's game, they can't rest on their laurels, you know, becoming the best of the rest, so to speak, behind, you know, the likes of England and France. That's not going to be enough because the others are going to catch up. You know, this is Scotland's first win in Wales in 20 years, sort of mirroring the men's team. They've got England next up, Wales. And you know, you look at around the tournament, I think Italy have just offered 22 professional contracts to their players, and they looked very stubborn against England in the first game. Just everyone's improving, aren't they, rapidly? And I think for as good a year as last year was in terms of the progress, you can't take your first foot off the accelerator, can you? If you're Wales, if you're Nigel Walker, if you're Yohan Cundam.
Yeah, that's the worry, isn't it? The worry is that, you know, the WIU have given these professional contracts to their credit, and then they just think it's a tick in a box and we don't have to do anything else, because standing still is going backwards, isn't it? And as you said, the likes of Scotland and Italy are catching up rapidly, and, you know, they need to continue to build on it. I actually thought, you know, they played well for large parts of the game against Scotland. Obviously, conversion at the end, they missed that, which is unfortunate. But, you know, it's a bit like some of the, it's a bit like the Cardiff game on Friday night in a way. You know, towards the end of the game, obviously, they all shaped to box kick. You know, and you're just thinking, like, you know, game management. You know, there was a lot of good in their game. They can hurt Scotland, but they didn't quite like nail those key moments. A bit like Wales in the Six Nations, in the men's Six Nations, I suppose. So that's something they're gonna need to work on. Obviously, England's probably not gonna be a pleasant experience because they're head and shoulders above most other teams in the women's game. But I think for the rest of the tournament after that, I think Wales have got enough about them to get a few victories, but they're just gonna probably need to be a little bit more accurate if they're going to get over the line, because they weren't maybe accurate enough against Scotland.
Yeah, and that's a big thing you mentioned there is game management. And obviously that's something that's very hard to coach. That basically comes down to experience in those moments. And
yeah,
that's probably why it's a shame that maybe Wales' hopes of another top three finish and qualifying for the top tier again of the W15 later in the year probably looking a bit dashed now after this opening defeat, because you can't imagine what good that would have done them last year playing against the best teams in the world down in New Zealand. You know, if you look at, you know, where Wales have been in the last couple of years, they basically had two World Cups in New Zealand, effectively. They had the proper World Cup in 2022 that was obviously delayed through COVID. And then they had another tournament against the world's best teams there last year. So that's invaluable in terms of learning experience. And you'd hope that will help in terms of their game management moving forwards. But it's one thing getting there, it's another thing staying there. And that's going to be the test, as we've said, for Wales, because, you know, teams around them are going to catch up quickly. But yeah, it won't get any easier, as we said, against England. You know, the Red Roses looked very good against Italy. Italy looked stubborn, in fairness to them, and held them out. But that's the thing with England sometimes, is I think you can almost put in a good performance, hold them out, and then you can still get to the end of the 80 minutes and look at the scoreline and it's something like 48-0.
Which happened to Wales last year.
Exactly. Really. You know, you came away from that, certainly that first half, thinking, I said, well, Wales have done well here. And then the final score, I can't quite remember what the final score was, but it was one-sided. And you sort of, that's just the danger and sort of the thing that you've got to live with. But yeah, hopefully as the tournament goes on, they can improve on some of the sort of the, well, just a slow start, I guess, in general against Scotland and some of those game management things, because yeah, certainly there's a lot more positives in women's rugby in Wales than the negatives in recent years. And, you know, it's important to remember where they're coming from. They're coming from a place of neglect, a bit like a lot of the issues in the men's game. It's coming from a place of 10 years or more so, probably in the women's game, of neglect. And that's a very hard thing to make up in a short space of time. And they've done a good job so far. But yeah, we just await to see how it goes moving forward. But first up is the Red Roses. So, yeah. That'll be an interesting one for sure to watch out for. And of course, we will bring all the reaction from that, as well as all the regional games, next week on the pod. If you have enjoyed the episode, do make sure to leave it a review, wherever you listen to your podcast, and subscribe. But until the next one, goodbye.